Are you guys having a great time tonight? Are you guys ready for some hot
podcast action?
We have a special treat for you. Let's give it up for
2 guys
talking.
Two Guys Talking is an internet radio show providing you with entertainment, a sharing of viewpoints, and fun. Join us as we venture into the world of entertainment and discuss a variety of topics, from television shows, DVDs, feature films, and more. This week, Two Guys Talking.
Transformers of Michael Bay Film.
One shall stand, two shall review.
If you thought the Two Guys Talking review of Transformers the Movie, the 20th Anniversary DVD was great, wait till you hear this one. It's the Transformers, a Michael Bay film review by Two Guys Talking. Welcome to the Two Guys Talking podcast. I'm Mike Wilkerson, one of your hosts.
And I am Brian Sumatros, your other host.
And folks, it's time for the Two Guys Talking podcast to review Michael Bay's new film, Transformers, appearing in July 2007. Brian, it's been 21 years since the release of the first Transformers the movie, which we also recently reviewed on the Two Guys Talking Podcast Network.
And who would have thought after all these years that they would have made a live-action film of Transformers?
Yeah.
And when I first heard the rumors coming out that there was going to be one, to be honest with you, I don't know if I was really cool with it. Because I was thinking, it can't be that good.
Well, the first thing I didn't want to jump onto was the I Hate Michael Bay train. Because the train is long, it is continuous, and it will never stop. It's one of those polar things with Michael Bay. You either hate him or you like him. Mm-hmm. And I think it's way too easy to instantly hate because Michael Bay is associated with the film. When you take the content of what's being created, when you take the fan base of what's being created, and you take the technology that's able to make both of those things, I think you have to give him at least the base amount of credit. And I think a lot of people didn't on this movie.
Yeah, and regardless of what you do think of Michael Bay, and I will go on record as saying I'm not a big fan of his, but I do think he is the type of director that you need to really get the Transformer franchise into the movie realm.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. The live-action Transformer universe needs to have a giant pair of robotic cojones on it.
Right.
He is the one to bring it.
Right.
Question.
And we also have Steven Spielberg as an executive producer
on it, which doesn't hurt. Right. Right.
At
because
all, so.
I really do think that that's going to help balance it out because you know you have the giant, wide sweeping, usually done in real life rather than all CGI action from Michael Bay. To temper that, you've got Spielberg, who obviously he does a ton of special effects himself, but he's got a completely different perspective on films than Michael Bay does. And I think the mix of those two has created something that's really special and different.
And what is your knowledge of the executive producer name? I mean, does that really entail that he did anything with the movie other than maybe put up some money?
Money, input, it really,
you really
depends.
Think he had some input,
yeah,
on it?
Oh,
because I always think,
yeah,
that the executive producer,
no,
really...
No, I don't agree with that, especially between... And that's why I think the role of executive producer actually transforms as well, depending on who's doing it in what movie. Because when you look at the executive producers of things like, Indiana Jones,
mm-hmm,
well, guess who the executive producer is there? It's Lucas.
And so when you
there's
first
no
heard...
way that they would put Lucas on just because Lucas is only giving money. He's in there giving ideas, and in fact, a lot of the original idea was lifted from him, and Steven just happened to be the director.
Okay, so let's say a couple of years ago, what was your first thoughts when you heard about the possibility that the movie was going to come out, live action, Michael Bay, Steven Spielberg?
When I first heard it, I heard Spielberg associated with it first, and I was instantly satisfied, because Steven really has to try and make something bad for me to not like it. I mean, really. Mm-hmm. When I look at the listing of his movies, even the ones that were so incredibly drama-laden, like Munich. Munich was an excellent movie, but it is definitely not a stereotypical Steven Spielberg movie, not by any stretch. It was an excellent movie. When Michael Bay was brought on, there was a little bit of flavor there. But what I also realized was the first thing I realized when I saw Jurassic Park was that until I saw Jurassic Park, dinosaurs were kind of these things that were lifted from a book and put into what was, look at the rubber dinosaur. Well, that all changed with Jurassic Park. And I think that this movie really does provide you with what is, look at the giant robot that's not a guy in a suit.
Yeah.
This brings it home.
Well, I'm glad you brought up the whole Jurassic Park thing, because that, and I like the way that you connected the dots there, because
yeah.
we do remember the era of movie making is when it took another step forward with Jurassic Park.
Huge and evolutionary leap, literally.
Great. Another great terminology there to use, Mike. And I think for the most part, you know, like I said, I mean, I was excited because I'm a Transformer fan. Yeah. I grew up in the 80s, played with the toys, but I wasn't sure that this was something that they're going to be able to do quality-wise.
Right. Something that we talked about inside of the Transformers, the 20th Anniversary Edition DVD review, was that I remember when they first started talking about a live-action movie, and there was a video, and there you can still find it on the web. It's a video of a Volkswagen Bug transforming and running off into the sunset. And I knew then, knowing that it had nothing to do with the movie, that we were going to be in good shape. Because if somebody that's just doing this can pull it off, and I go, oh, that looks credible. You know, it was the fenders and the wheels and the look, it's an Autobot. And then it wasn't. It was a car and it drove away. If they can pull that off, Michael Bay and a budget with Steven Spielberg's guidance, if nothing else, can easily do it, can pull it off. A great preliminary discussion, Brian. Let's get straight into the Two Guys Talking official review of Transformers, a Michael Bay film.
One shall stand, two shall review.
The hype.
Mike, I remember the very first trailer I saw for Transformers.
Oh my, I do too.
Being in the theater, and the trailer that they used, they actually were able to incorporate that same footage within the movie again. It was the one with the Beagle.
The Mars rover that was supposedly, quote, lost.
Right.
You know, another black bag op that the military's pulled over everybody's eyes.
Right. And you remember on the screen, you see that it actually did... Or survive
land.
The lander,
well, rather it,
and it starts looking
landing,
around,
right,
and then all of a sudden you see this huge,
it looks like a shadow. You see the shadow first,
right.
And then the camera whip pans around, and all you see is this kind of structure with this, you know, this kind of weird silhouette and a robotic hand, and just for a second.
And you see a little bit of a face,
yeah.
A little bit of a robotic face, and then everything, right.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
When I saw that, I was like, interesting. I like the way they're tying into something that happened within real life.
Right.
And
it was also a neat take because, again, this entire franchise, and it will continue, I guarantee, this entire franchise, all of the things tied to the franchise prior to this and all of the toys and the comic books and everything else that was tied to it prior to that all has a flavor. And that's honestly why we're doing these podcasts, is because there's something ethereal about the Transformers. It passes through loops of time, interest, and fandom that you really can't put your finger on. You can't draw a box around people and go, those people are Transformers fans. It reminds me very much of what is the Star Trek mythos, where you go, what is your average Star Trek fan? You kind of point at planet Earth and go, they are. Mm-hmm. Because there's somebody everywhere that likes and or loves Transformers. And inside of that trailer, they brought that. They brought it to school. They brought the motor sounds of what a Transformer would sound like. They had kind of a yawed voice that would, you know,
whatever that's going to be.
And then, of course, they had what was a manufactured silhouette that we couldn't make out. We don't know exactly who it was. We still don't either, I don't think. But all of that all had the flavor that ties all of the franchise together. And that is perfect. That is key.
And knowing how big Transformers box office-wise has been,
do you
really think that the base of the viewers are as broad? You mentioned Star Trek.
Yeah.
Do you think that the Star Trek viewers are as broad-based as they are for Transformers?
Yeah.
And really?
I would almost say the Transformers is larger because...
That's what I'm saying.
Oh,
and
yeah,
that's
yeah.
what I think. I think it's much larger than Star Trek. And when you say, what is a Star Trek fan?
Right.
I mean, I still have... And I like Star Trek.
Right.
But I'm not a Trekkie or a Trekster or anything.
Right.
And
Trekster, that's a new one. I haven't heard that one.
I still think that's a little more narrow of a base than what I've seen for Transformers. Now, I will say that has changed, you know, the last couple of years thinking, okay, well, who's going to go see this Transformer movie other than Mike and I and everybody else, every other boy that played with Transformers
right.
back in the 80s?
Well, and the answer is
and
everybody.
The answer is it seemed like everybody went out there, which is great to see. Just the wide swath that it took of everybody going to see the movie.
Yeah,
and, it was kind of cool knowing that I wasn't such a geek that it had a wide appeal to a lot of different people.
Yeah, I agree totally with that. What we also talk about inside the hype is the actual theater that we saw it in. We saw it in the largest local digital theater, the Galaxy, here in Chesterfield, Missouri. Humongous. I don't know what the tech specs are, but it's ginormous. It's a ginormous screen. Every single seat was taken. In fact, I had the crappiest seat I've had in probably 10 years. Because when we got there, that's all that was left. We got there ridiculously late. It was a really funky, it was July 4th. It was the Wednesday,
okay,
July 4th traffic. And so, of course, everybody's in the movies because it's like 1,000 degrees outside. And so everybody was inside the movies. And literally everybody, I can go look at the little tiny toddler, and that usually makes me really angry when I go to movies. But right in front of us was a really good, mild-mannered toddler being held in daddy's, you know, shoulder. And from that to aged people that were just there to see the wonder of what this movie, the Transformers, a Michael Bay film, is.
And you said you got there late. I mean, how early did you get there? Or how late did you
get
there?
We got there probably 5 minutes before the trailer start, which is ridiculous.
That is very late
for me.
A huge movie like that. And you were still able to sit far enough back from the main screen?
No, it was... That's the benefit of this screen being so huge. The screen was so big... The screen was so big that they don't even have any what are flat chairs. They're all stadium seats. Mm-hmm. And so there's probably, I don't know, 6 rows of stadium seats that are on the floor where that flat set of chairs used to be.
And is that where you sat?
On the left-hand side.
And I understand, I mean, that does help a lot, but especially on those big screens, even if you're in the first half of that theater, you're still looking up and you can only see so much of the screen.
Absolutely. My plan before we actually did this review was to go and see it again, and I just simply have not had enough time to go spend another couple of hours to go and see the movie again, especially in that one theater, because I want to see it again in that gorgeous, humongous digital theater. And I didn't. So the view I got was skewed, but the view I got, I really, really liked.
Well, I saw the movie just a couple days ago. Actually, it was Monday night. Got the kids to bed, and this seems to be the MO for me now, is that once we get the kids to bed, my wife and I, every other week, we let the other person go out to go watch a movie. It's kind of cool to get out by yourself, but then it's one of those things where you feel kind of lonely.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're past that. Being adults and you're a parent and everything, you don't care. You just want to get out and have some fun.
Sure.
And I got there, it was a 10 o'clock showing for Transformers. I saw it at the same theater that you did, but I saw it on the smaller screen, but it was a digital.
It was digital. Okay.
It was digital.
Yeah.
And
just to break in, for those that are going to see this, please take the time to go see it on digital presentation.
Yeah,
there's no, you just can't say it's a fad anymore. The difference between what is a digital presentation and what is old school reel to reel presentation, I don't have the words to explain the difference between the two. It's like looking at a piece of crystal in your hand, and then looking at an old 50s television with somebody holding a piece of crystal in it. That is the difference. It is that immaculately different.
And the very last time you see it is going to be exactly the same as the first time you see it on the digital projector.
Right.
There's no degradation at all, as opposed to the regular film.
Right.
And we've all been to movies before where, you know, the film has run hundreds of times, and you can tell. I mean, there's a lot of
pops and
pops,
cracks,
scratches,
and stuff in it. Yeah.
And it gives a feel to going to the theater. I don't mind it as much. But now that we have the alternative to watch something digital, I mean, that is my preference. So I made sure that I went to the one that had the digital projection.
If you went to that theater, you were in one of the three theaters that are there. There's one that's 150, there's one that's 180, and then there's a 325 theater. And then there's the one that we were in, which is about, I think it's 800.
It was one of the smaller ones.
Yeah.
And I would say...
Which was excellent, because any one of those are the ones I saw Spider-Man 3 on, and they're all outstanding.
Yeah, and it's great.
I think that the sound in that one is actually better than the gargantuan sound.
Well, I'm glad you're talking about sound. We'll get into sound here in just a little bit.
Yeah.
I would say there was about maybe 30 people there that night on Monday watching the show.
Wow.
And, I mean, as far as any kind of buzz, I mean, I think for the most part, most of the people there were, you know, teenagers, young adults. There was one other guy there that was there by himself, like me, and we sat kind of far away from each other so that people didn't think we were kind of funny or anything. But it was as far as the theater and the hype and everything, I mean, it was pretty much to be expected. I mean, obviously, I enjoy going to the big movies on the premiere week that it happens, because you get the buzz.
As do I.
There wasn't
much
buzz that night.
I was the president of a club for about 10 years that went out to movies regularly. And a lot of the people that I got to go to movies were scared of that first weekend because, the crowd and I gotta wait. Oh, whatever, dude. Mm-hmm. Let's go see the movie on the opening weekend so we can get the feel and the hype of the crowd. That's why we call it The Hype.
One shall stand. Two shall review.
The money. I always love to use the euphemism corn combine for cash. Folks, this was no exception.
This has got to be a healthy summer for the movie industry in general.
A gargantuan summer for the film industry.
You know, several years ago, how the movie industry was almost dead. And movies like Transformers, Pirates, Spider-Man, Shrek, I mean, very healthy injections of cash into the pocketbooks of the very rich.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
It looks... rather into the film industry, because I know that, you know, everybody loves to think that Spielberg and Bay are standing there with people with wheelbarrows wheeling over a pile of cash and gold bullion and putting it in their pocket. And it doesn't usually turn out like that.
But when you're pulling in money like this and Pirates, I mean, it's pretty much wheelbarrows of money that they're just pulling
out. Damn them.
But anyways, yeah, it looks like the first week in the box office, Transformers did about $152.5
million. $152.5
million. And that's just
by the way,
domestically.
Right, and that's $12 million over and above what Spider-Man did for its first weekend.
Yeah, that's right. You're absolutely
so
right there.
So it literally is, you know, the Transformer that makes you turn and snap your head. Just huge, giant coffers of cash.
And I think globally it brought in $246 million. So obviously this
amazing.
Is a wide range, a ton of different people coming to watch this movie.
Right. And for all of those that are wondering, oh, is that all it's going to make? Absolutely not. It's going to continue for as long as there can be space inside of a theater, especially digital theaters for that presentation, as well as the DVD cache. You want to see DVD cache? Wait till this DVD comes out. You will not believe the numbers, especially overseas, that you will see on the DVD for Transformers, a Michael Bay film.
Unless,
no doubt.
You think the movies that are coming out, let's say this fall, are going to have problems because of the whole battle between Blu-ray, HD DVD, and DVD? And not to get into too much of that conversation, although that would be a great show on itself that I think we should do.
Yeah.
But you know what I'm saying? Because
I don't think so.
I don't know if I would want to buy a movie on DVD this fall knowing that by next year everything's going HD, DVD, or Blu-ray.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
I don't know. The DVD markets are so fickle anyway. The only DVD I think I'm going to have a problem even thinking about buying might be Pirates 3 because I want to finish out the collection. But the rest of them,
yeah.
I can wait on it. There's absolutely no hurry at all.
One shall stand, two shall review.
The good. There was a litany of really great things going on inside this film. The first of which is...
One shall stand, two shall review.
The effects. Brian, I know that you opened this with not being sure of what would happen with, I don't know, Michael Bay. Oh, I hate him. Oh, I don't know about the tech. Oh, I don't know if they can pull off a Transformer. Mm-hmm. Consider it pulled off.
Yeah.
Period. There is no, I don't want to hear any discussion about, oh, I couldn't handle the thus and such. Come on. There were gorgeous cars and trucks transforming into giant robots and kicking all kinds of Michael Bay ass.
Yeah.
It was awesome. It was just awesome.
The effects, the visual, and let's also lump in the audio on this because we did touch on audio at the beginning of our review here.
Yeah.
And not to steer away too much away from the visual effects, and we'll get back to that.
Yeah.
But the audio, I thought, and the only word that I kept thinking of as I was listening and being encased into this world of Transformers as I was watching this was that it was very punchy.
Yeah.
The audio, it's one of the punchiest that I've ever been around in a theater.
Yeah.
And when I say that, I mean it's very sharp. It's just big, but not.
Not
obnoxious
overbearing.
Big.
Right.
You know
right.
what I'm saying?
Absolutely. In fact, we talked about that a couple of podcasts ago, and I've forgotten which one. It was another, I know what it was. It was with Ryan talking about the Spider-Man 3 review podcast that we did. And inside of Spider-Man 3, and I'm absolutely certain it's because of whatever new sound systems have been added into those digital theaters, especially the ones that you were in, because I love it.
Mm-hmm.
That smaller representation, that either 125 or the 155 room that you were in, the sound in those is much more representative and bold. The punchy is excellent. And punchy in that it's like you have a pillow in your lap, and when something really chaotic goes on, you feel it in your lap. But it's not that overbearing that used to happen in all of the giant theaters. They all used to have that throbbing bass that did nothing
but
shake
clear.
All the chairs. Right, but
it's very crystal clear.
It's crystal clear, and it shakes you to your core, rather than just pissing off your ears. You're absolutely
so
right.
So maybe we have to put, as far as the audio, a little asterisk to it, because it could be because of the rooms that
the
we're
facility,
in.
Right.
The technology on that. But I think for the most part, as much as we could determine, I mean, the audio track, the visuals in the movie are just absolutely gorgeous. Mike mentioned a little bit about the cars.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, obviously through the entire movie was almost like a commercial for, was it GM or Pontiac?
Yes and no. The problem is that every single car was a $500,000 plus prototype.
Mm-hmm.
So while they had the flavor of what was either a concept car, which I thought was very, very cool, or even the crusty old ageness of what is a, you know, a classic Camaro, it's all gorgeous. You look at that literal piece of shit Camaro that Bumblebee chooses to emulate in the beginning, and you look at it and you go, damn, that is a cool looking car, even though it's
just a piece of shit. Yeah.
Again, that speaks to the flavor. The flavor that they had to somehow capture and then pull across 21 years of space, they were able to do it, emulate it, and show you, again, a giant-ass robot kicking ass.
One shall stand. Two shall review.
The acting. Now, I will say, for the most part, pretty good acting from everybody within the movie, but I do want to give kudos to Shia LaBeouf, because I really thought he did an excellent job
at
balancing
totally.
Everything within the realm of Transformers with a great sense of humor, and it wasn't over the top.
Right.
I thought he did a really good job, and it's
yeah.
one of those things
yeah.
to where it was very almost pleasing just to sit there and have a main character in a big-time movie. A Michael Bay movie that's not obnoxious, that doesn't detract from the storyline.
Exactly.
I was very pleased. I was almost kind of proud that he performed so well, being a younger actor.
Yeah.
As far as some of the other actors, actresses in the movie, I don't know necessarily if there's anybody else that really did as well as he did.
Uh-huh.
And you're going to have to check me for a fever here, Mike, because I can't believe I'm going to say this. But I almost think that the two girls that are in the movie, Megan Fox, who plays Michaela,
uh-huh.
and Rachel Taylor, who plays the techie girl Maggie,
right.
in there,
the
were
Aussie.
Almost too good-looking and too distracting for the movie, especially Maggie,
yeah.
especially Rachel Taylor, the Aussie.
Yes.
Because, you know, it's just one of those things where...
Okay, I don't think she was old enough.
Well, I think she's way too good-looking to be a super hacker. Honestly. I mean, when you...
The heels that she had on the street. It was... I'm like, okay, they may have had us if they put her in some short pumps, maybe a 2-inch heel. She's running across the street downtown Washington D.C.
The entire movie she's in those pumps or whatever, and she looks
ridiculous.
Awesome. Both of those girls are absolutely gorgeous.
Oh yeah,
and I can kind of buy into Megan Fox and her character there. Okay,
yes,
and she is one of the most. I mean, the way she looked in there,
yes,
unbelievable.
Yes.
Okay. Rachel Taylor.
They know how to use Golden Hour inside that movie, without question.
Rachel Taylor, though, it's just not believable. You show me a hacker that looks like her anywhere close to Rachel Taylor, you're not going to find her.
And that's our first call to the audience. Do you know of a beautiful, gorgeous hacker? Make sure you let us know by sending email to info@twoguystalking.com. That's the number 2guystalking.com.
Send pictures there, too.
Pictures, too. Pictures. So anyway, getting back to the acting, you're absolutely right about Shia. He pulls it off here like he pulls it off in so many other situations when he's been acting. The over-the-topness you're talking about was showcased inside of iRobot, where he plays what is basically the same but younger character, but it's way, way, way too over-the-top.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where he was able to reel it in, and I'm absolutely certain it's because of the intervention of one, Steven Spielberg, who has made actors for as long as Steven Spielberg has been in the business. He knows how to talk to actors, he knows how to guide actors into position, and he knows how to get actors to hit a home run. And I think we're going to see even more of that in the next Indiana Jones film, because as you know, he's also been cast in that film.
Oh, is he the...
He's going to be the young boy, the son of Indiana Jones, instead of the next Indiana Jones film.
That's probably good casting.
Oh, I think it's excellent casting.
Okay.
And the flavor that he has pulled off inside this movie is a lot of what can happen for what is, for lack of a better term, the next or younger Indiana Jones. I really can see that. The legs that he has as an actor are huge. He can really go in so many different directions. And the reason I remember him, I will always remember him from not only iRobot, but also from Project Greenlight, the second season, where they made the movie inside of that show, and he has a mouth on him. He has a mouth that
really?
You would not believe. Yeah, and when they made that movie, he was 16. So now he's probably just, what, 19, 20 maybe?
Mm-hmm.
So he's really coming into his own. He has a lot of craft in front of him, but the most important part is that people are helping put craft into him. The rest of the acting inside the movie, I think it was absolutely adequate. I didn't go into this hoping that I would be seeing the next Schindler's List. I went into this movie knowing that eventually I would hear that sound. I would see those people, those robots, and then I would see major ass kicking.
But then I was also hoping that the acting wouldn't suck away too much of the coolness of Transformers.
True.
And it really didn't. And when you say it was adequate, it was okay. I mean, yeah, I mean, Josh Duhamel, Tyrese Gibson, some of the other actors that were on here, John Turturro, John Boyd. Yeah, I mean, it was fine. It was nothing that detracted too much for me, and they did okay.
I can totally see where there's going to be just a waft of something that might have been taken away from the film, and we'll get to those.
One shall stand, two shall review.
The vision of Cybertron. Again, they have taken a complete flavor that has to be delivered. It has to be 100% payoff. It has to be 100% quick. And it has to be paid off 100% as the meteorites crash to Earth. And instantly, in the matter of 30 seconds, inside of an intro, with Peter Cullen as Optimus Prime voicing over the beginning of the film, it's done! It's perfect! It provides everyone that has no idea what Transformers is, what the planet may have looked like, and it's definitely not the Cybertron that we're used to seeing from the comic books. It's nothing like it. And I love that. I love that they can take what is the flavor, the elegance of what is supposed to be Cybertron, this planet of a mass of robots that once were at peace, and now they're fighting each other until they're almost both doomed, and then you see what is now called the Allspark disappear into the nothingness of space and move its way to Earth. That entire segment instantly reels you into this film.
And you say nothing like Cybertron, but it's still something that's very believable, especially for the fans of Transformers.
I mean,
I could definitely believe everything that was going on. I was very absorbed into what was going on as far as the backstory, but I think it was important that they had to obviously show us some backstory, some of the history to catch some people up.
Right.
But it wasn't so over the head, overdone, to where it kind of bored some of the big Transformer fans that
were
there.
Correct. And so, I'll tell you what happens is, if you look at the beginning of what is the 20th anniversary DVD, it almost is too much. It is. As much as we love that and give it a great review, if you were to try to translate that into what you see in the beginning of this film, you would have had bored-ass people at this film.
Well, but I think that's because it's been done. And like you said, it was done on the anniversary DVD of the animated film from 20 years ago.
Right.
They couldn't do it again because, I mean, we would rail all over that in this review.
Right.
I enjoyed that on the DVD.
Yeah.
The backstory of it.
Oh, yeah. But watching it again.
Right.
Again.
Right.
I mean, no. I'm so happy that they didn't just try to emulate what is Transformers on the 2D page or even inside of the movie as a 2D/3D entity in real life. They didn't even try to do that. They just said, this is how we got to do it and make it all look in this vision. And they pulled it off.
One shall stand, two shall review.
Respecting the past. Mike, I thought this was another thing that they had to do right, not so over the top, but I think they did a pretty good job, was some of the handshaking into what happened in the previous movie and some of the Transformer lore that we all know that had happened within Transformers years ago.
Right.
There were several things that I really enjoyed watching in the movie. One of the things that comes to mind is, obviously, you mentioned Peter Cullen as Optimus Prime's voice.
Yeah.
I mean, that would have been a sad thing if they couldn't get him to do it.
Right. When I was reading a forum recently,
mm-hmm.
George Clooney?
For Optimus Prime, if they couldn't get Cullen?
No, thank you.
No.
No, thank you.
No, I mean, you had to go with Peter Cullen, and Optimus Prime, I mean, he's such an icon for Transformers.
And in this case, an earcon.
Yeah.
You hear a voice?
Get back here and face justice for all that you've destroyed.
And instantly you go, oh, Optimus Prime.
Right.
Instantly.
Right. And a couple other things that they did in the movie when they finally, when Megatron thawed out towards the end of the movie and his little comment to Starscream about failing him again.
Yeah.
I mean, that's something that we heard in the DVD movie. That's something that recurred several times over in the cartoon version in the 80s.
Yeah. Well, and I'll tell you, the paycheck that Hugo Weaving made on what was the role of Megatron in this film, what a sweet paycheck. Because while, you know, everything was on, it was very, it was a very Megatron-like, providing Megatron-ness.
Mm-hmm.
That was fine. But it was so little. It was so very little. And, yeah. I'm hoping that they might rectify that in what might be a future film, which they kind of set
it
up for.
Well, and another thing that they did that was also an overt homage to the movie was a direct line that Optimus says to Megatron, that
one shall stand, one shall fall.
And it's exactly from the movie, and I thought that was brilliant.
Yeah.
Now, I'm glad they didn't do that all through the movie where they just lifted a bunch of quotes from the animated movie.
Right.
But something like that, I mean, it's kind of neat to see them paying a little, like I said, homage to the past.
It's perfect. When you talk about homage to the past, you can then get into what is the look of the vehicles, with the perhaps the grand exception of Bumblebee, which I really didn't care from the beginning that it wasn't a Volkswagen Bug, but they even have a Volkswagen Bug sitting next to Bumblebee, the piece of shit Camaro, inside of the car lot.
So a lot of small things that some people may not pick up.
There's a little putting of the hands together and a tilting of the head to all the fans that can now see. They can almost actually see. This is why we didn't give you the Bug, because this is what it would have looked like.
Yeah.
And I mean, it did. It looked like crap. And I love Beetles. Mm-hmm. My first car was a Beetle, and it was yellow. It just was kind of a more of a lemon yellow, not nearly what a Bumblebee would have been. But you look at that car, and then you look next to it, and you see this Camaro, again, that we go back to from one of our previous points. It was a piece of shit, but it was awesome.
Yeah.
You look at it, and then, of course, when Michaela opens up the hood, and there's this ungodly engine waiting in there, it's like, oh!
For those of us that were paying attention to the engine and not her rock-hard abs that she had pulsating as she was breathing.
Yeah, that were having the suntan lotion squeezed onto them as you're
walking. Another thing that the writers and the producers and director deserve just mega kudos for is the explanation of, and basically how to get out of the Transformers that we know. How do we get out of Bumblebee being a bug, or how do we get out of certain Transformers looking like they're supposed to? And for them to explain that they can take on the form or shape of something that is right there, I thought was very good. And again, it wasn't overdone.
Right. And the best part of that, robots in disguise, that is exactly in just, 5 seconds where you see them, they have the digital line screening whatever vehicle they're looking at back and forth. Instantly, you go, oh, that's why.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody can say that. You don't have to be an Autobot fan, a Decepticon fan, a Transformers fan. You don't have to. You understand, okay, they're looking at the car. Oh, well, they're robot people. And they can't just walk around like robots because somebody's going to go, look, a giant-ass robot. Ah!
Right.
And so they have to take on forms around them.
But it not only explains this movie here, but it also gives some information to the past as well, explaining, well, the past could still have happened in some form, because they just took the form of, like, a.k.a. Bumblebee as the Bug, Starscream as the Jet, obviously. But, you know, they can definitely change depending on technology as it changes over time. So I thought it was a great way for them to do that.
Yeah, well, very well done.
One shall stand. Two shall review.
Being raucous. Inside of the Spider-Man 3 review that we had with Ryan Parker from the Comic Knot podcast, which you can also see on the Two Guys Talking Podcast Network, inside of that podcast, we talked about how the battles with Spider-Man and every one of the 8,000 villains in this Spider-Man 3 movie interacted with Spider-Man. And honestly, I love Spider-Man. I've always loved Spider-Man. One of my favorite comic books of all time. But when I see the actual 3D fights that are going on, and the swirling camera-ness and the all kinds of stuff, it was hard to know literally which end was up. And I'm certain that at least a little bit of that was intentional. But it was almost unappealing inside of Spider-Man 3. Fast forward to this film. None of this. You knew exactly where you were. You knew exactly what was happening to whom and when it was happening. And that is the genius of Michael Bay as a director. So take away what you want about, oh, he knows how to blow things up. Michael Bay knows action. The other thing he knows is real action. Those cars that you see flailing across inside of the city streets on the giant end fight, well, those are real cars. Those are not cars that are inserted with CGI, all the camera work that's done. There's certainly some CGI in there because they didn't obviously have the giant transforming robots moving around. Those were CGI. But everything else around them was all real in camera. And that is the genius of Michael Bay.
Well, I will give him credit as far as for most of the action scenes. The fighting between the robots was pretty cool. I will diverge from your opinion on how great that was, and that's actually going to be a point in the negative comments for me.
Okay.
But, I mean, for the most part, yeah. I mean, it was very – when you're watching it, it wasn't like, oh, man, there's some CGI there or there's some real stuff there.
It's all seamless.
I mean, honestly, other than knowing that Transformers aren't for real,
right.
I mean, it was kind of hard to tell what was the CGI and what was real stuff, or at least it looked pretty cool.
Yeah.
And very believable. So I will give him credit for that.
One shall stand, two shall review.
Story in an action movie. You know that there's always got to be story in what is, I think, easily one of the best action movies ever in history, Raiders of the Lost Ark. You have what is one of the most ornate stories, but it's presented wrapped inside of this tortilla that is one of the best action films ever in movie history. And it comes out as a solid 10, a scale of 1 to 10. Inside of this movie, it's definitely not Raiders of the Lost Ark. There's nothing you can butter up about this movie. It's the introduction to giant ass-kicking robots from the planet Cybertron. That is the story of this movie. And that they're looking for something. And not so strangely, inside of every single episode of the Transformers, there were two plots. You'll join me if you remember them. The first plot is that the Decepticons have figured out a way to create Energon cubes so that they can take over the planet. The second plot was that the Autobots have found out a way to create Energon cubes and are going to help the humans make sure that the Decepticons don't take over the planet. And that was it. There was no, well, let's make the story this color. There wasn't any of that. There was this or it was that. And so when I look at that spectrum of storytelling, 100% made inside of this movie.
I do think that they were a lot more diverse in the storytelling in this movie as compared to the cartoon versions.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Comparing it to the animated movie, I think the storyline within the animated movie was a little deeper than it was in this one here.
I think the movie was longer, too, though.
And it could have been. I don't have the exact details
also,
on that.
And more characters, more... The animated movie absolutely relies on people knowing who the characters are. This one doesn't. You can have Joe Guy walking in and
there was just a handful of characters in this one as opposed to in the movie. But in the movie, you needed tons of them because they all died
in the first 10 minutes. Yeah.
But on a movie like this, I mean, you do need a story, obviously, to make it a good movie. Do you need an exceptional story to pass as a decent movie? You know, not really. And that wasn't really something that I expected, nor was it something that I observed while watching this movie.
Right.
Was there room for improvement on the storyline? Yeah, I think so. But again, it wasn't something that it detracted me too much from enjoying myself watching it. So.
Right.
One shall stand. Two shall review.
The Bad. Just like any other movie, there are always going to be something, even inside of what was the 20th anniversary DVD review, there were things that were, I suppose, can be called bad.
And the first of them that we're going to talk about is the ruckusness. And I know Mike mentioned this as a good positive point just a few minutes ago, but I do want to say that the exact point that he was talking about as far as the camera angles, especially within the battle scene between the Autobots and Decepticons towards the end of the movie within the city, I felt it kind of confusing.
Really?
And I thought that the shots were way too close to get a hold of really what was going on a full screen. I can't imagine watching that movie on that giant screen that you were watching it on and being that close and trying to follow the action.
Yeah.
I thought the camera and the camera angles were way too close in those fighting scenes. It was something that I thought kind of detracted from because I want to see, you know, a couple tight shots here and there I think are cool because you want to see a lot of the details as far as the action, and sometimes you want to, you know, when you're trying to portray a big fight scene or something, you want to try to get the whole confusion of the moment.
Mm-hmm.
But it was almost, the cameras were way too close that I couldn't really tell what was going on. It was almost like sitting in front of a screen that's too big and you're way too close. And I felt that for most of the fight scene throughout the city. So
what about the other ones, though? The best example I can think of is the original fight scene you see where they're basically in what I'm assuming is somewhere in Iraq,
mm-hmm.
and the base is being taken over by Blackout. Mm-hmm. Thoughts?
That was the first Transformers scene we see in the movie.
Right. And it's also one that had been showcased in most of if there were any trailers that you saw. Yeah, yeah. Between the fight with the robot that was on the Army base in the beginning, the Army / Air Force / whatever base it was, because I think all of the armed forces were actually represented, and I think that that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. On that base where they had Blackout just kicking all kinds of military ass sideways. You'll remember that with the tanks actually being thrown like toys, literally. And I can remember throwing toys like that when we were playing with the toys way back then.
But the difference between that battle scene and the one in the city is that one you had a lot of long shots.
Yeah,
where you
actually see him
him in context where you can tell his size compared to the other, you know, tanks, that compared to the army base, compared to everything else. You can kind of see everything that's going on.
I'll concede that one.
Again, I'm not saying that I don't like close shots. I just thought that the shots in the city was too close, too much. And I really couldn't get a handle on what was going on. It's kind of a strange thing to try to explain, you know, sitting here with you.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where we almost have to go sit and watch the movie over again. And it's one of those things that maybe I'll change my mind, or maybe, you know, I'll come to appreciate it a little bit more. But it was something that kind of bothered me.
Yeah, this is one of those movies I think that you really do need to see more than once. There's just no way to finagle into the schedule when it's in the theater, because I can't just drop everything, throw in the DVD and watch it. I know that after the DVD comes out, I will be watching it several times, especially now that last scene, because I want to see exactly what it is you're talking about.
One shall stand, two shall review.
Potty humor. I have never been, nor do I think I will ever be, a fan of just inserted potty humor for potty humor's sake. The farts, the burps, the goony little laughter, the... I can't even call them geek moments, because I'm a geek, but I don't like them. Those moments could all disappear from this film, and you would lose nothing. And this kind of goes back to one of the points I wanted to talk about when we were talking about the bads from the previous review of the 20th anniversary DVD, is if you can remove something from a film and nothing happens, either good or bad, chances are it probably didn't belong in that movie.
Well, that wasn't something just from the 20th anniversary DVD. That's something from almost every review we've done on movies.
Correct. And what that harkens back to is what was our first movie review, which was Superman Returns, mm-hmm. where you look at the kid and you go, okay, so the kid disappears and what happens? Mm-hmm. And the answer is nothing happens.
Well, but you know the reason why we had to have it in this movie is because we have to relate. It's the Jar Jar Binks thing. The kids love potty humor. We don't.
Right.
And I agree with you on that. And I'm going to lump in the whole just goofiness of some of the scenes in the
movie.
Especially, I'm going to lump it in here where they're at the house.
When they're at the house and the Autobots are trying to hide.
Hide. Right. And they're all kind of underneath. All that goofy stuff.
Yes.
I really did not like that in this movie. And I really wish that they would have cut that out somehow. I understand. And I did appreciate some of the funny stuff. I mean, maybe one or two of the potty things. But for the most part, I mean, when we talked about how a lot of things were not overdone in this movie, the potty humor was definitely overdone to where it just was...
It detracted from the movie, without question. It detracted from the movie.
The whole scene about them hiding around in the house I thought was just horrible.
If it had been shorter, I think it would have worked just fine. But where you get to the point where the parents are stupid. I want them to not be stupid parents.
Right.
Because they've been able to raise a boy who apparently has some sort of good morals and a head on his shoulders. And so to see that they want to portray them that stupid or overbearing or whatever moniker we're going to label onto those two parents, it's not worth it. It's not worth it in the story to lose what it is by providing that stuff.
Well, here, for example, the house scene, okay? What would have worked on that is, and what still would be funny, is obviously showing the Transformers walk around the back and, you know, the grass is all jacked up now and the concrete's all messed up. That was funny to see.
Yeah.
And that could have been the humor for that whole section. And then when they started cutting out to where, you know, they're hiding around the house, and then later on, I think, what was it, Ironhide or Bumblebee peeing on the guy from Sector 7 or Section 7, whatever that was.
Yeah.
I'm just like, eh. But I understand why they did that is because of the kids.
Right.
And the kids love that crap.
Right.
And, well, I guess a lot of the adults probably do, too. But
it's
I don't
one
know,
of
maybe
that
that's
you,
one of the things we should ask the listeners. I mean, did that stuff bother you guys, the potty humor, the goofiness around the house? What did you guys think about that? Let Mike and I know at info@twoguystalking.com. It's info@2guystalking.com.
One shall stand, two shall review.
The Sector 7 nests. All right, so we have John Turturro, who, by all accounts, is a talented actor. There's no question about it. He's been in a variety of films that span just about every spectrum, from what is hardcore mafioso to the Goonie character wearing the hat, John Shooter, inside of the secret window, all the way up to what is now Monk. He plays Monk's brother, Ambrose Monk, which is a spectacular character for him. The problem is that it was almost too big a cartoon character inside of this, his Sector 7 agent character. It was too overly black helicopter bombastic.
Men in Black.
Yes.
It was too Men in Black, the actual movie.
And it was like Jackass Men in Black. There wasn't a Jackass like him in Men in Black. There were some quips, especially from Tommy Lee Jones, but Tommy Lee Jones delivering those, it's a piece of Tommy Lee Jones. It basically turns into John Turturro trying to provide what is a good Tommy Lee Jones character role, and it didn't work.
Yeah.
It didn't work for me. I didn't like the... I wasn't sure where they were going with the... He's got the pink cotton S or some Sector 7 logo on his undershirt.
That's just part of the potty humor that they were trying to go. I mean, it was something
nothing.
That's, yeah.
It does nothing to advance the movie. It doesn't even get a... here's what it gets from me. Instead of getting a, well, that's funny, that's cute. What it gets from me, and you can't see this, it's my furrowed brow. My furrowed brow is what that garners, because I'm like, okay, I'm right in the movie. I am being collected by this movie hand and fist. What the hell is this?
Well, you know what?
That's the only thing that got me inside the movie, even with some of the potty humor parts. That's what got me, because I'm like, oh, wait a second. We want him to be a badass Sector 7 guy. Okay, all right, I can buy that. Look at the suit. Look at the guys around him. They all have firepower, blah, blah, blah. What the hell is that?
Well, what they were channeling and what we said there is that the Sector 7 channels Men in Black, the movie. What it should have channeled was the X-Files.
Right.
And that whole secret society. If it was that, that would be cool.
Yeah.
But this whole Men in Black thing, and it was...
It was stupid Men in Black. Because I totally hear where you're going with the Men in Black comments. I get that.
Mm-hmm.
I got to give props, and it's probably one of the best science fiction films that's been put out. The original Men in Black movie was an outstanding movie, and the flavor of the agents that you get in that, it was that overtly, I am a badass agent, and I'm going to say what I want to you, and then you're going to get off my planet. And that's what was missing from here.
Mm-hmm.
This guy was just an asshole. That's all he was.
Yeah, but what I was hoping, and I understand, and I like Men in Black, but there was a goofiness to it that just is associated with Men in Black.
Yes.
That's Agreed. Something that I didn't want to see here within Transformers,
sure.
which is something that John Turturro brought in with his character.
Right.
Now, I'm not blaming it on John Turturro, because I'm sure that's how the character and the whole Sector 7 thing was somewhat written.
Right.
But it was just one of those things where it was just almost, he's just kind of a goofball that we all kind of make fun of.
It was a total detractor.
We know he's a guy in high school that got picked on. You know, it's just one of those things.
Yeah.
And where I wish it went more like what the X-Files did with the whole secret society and the cigarette man and that whole group of people that, you know, transcends presidents, that is actually in control of all the information as far as all of the extraterrestrial type stuff.
Yeah.
That, I think, would have been really cool for the movie.
Well, and see, you could have continued that into what is the future of movies. In fact, I suppose you still can with Sector 7. Just for those of you that are producing the next film, that are listening to the Two Guys Talking podcast, lay off the potty humor. There's no need for it.
One shall stand. Two shall review.
Decepticon Depth. Now, Mike, I think the movie did a pretty good job of going into some of the characters of the Autobots, giving them a little depth as far as their backstory, the personalities. You kind of get to know the Autobots as actual characters.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, they didn't do this very same thing with the Decepticons, which is actually kind of a shame, because you have some great Decepticon characters, some of which didn't make it into the movie, but may make it into sequels, which is kind of cool to think.
Right.
But one of the greatest characters for Transformers that everybody remembers is Starscream.
Right.
And for the most part, we don't get anything from Starscream other than blowing up some jets at the end.
Right. And some incredibly badass action. We do get that from him, but you're absolutely right.
The only depth we really get is from Megatron, and we don't get Megatron until the end of the movie.
Well, and I don't even think they flesh out Megatron, except that he is this bringer of rain to some extraordinarily badass activity, unless the Autobots ensue. That we get. We totally get that.
Right.
But you're absolutely
right. But
for
the most part, you get nothing out of the Decepticons, which is kind of a shame, because you don't see them as a worthy adversary for the Autobots.
True.
And the whole thing about the Transformers are the robots.
Right.
And for the most part, we get a little bit out of the Autobots, and then the story just kind of, these are the bad guys.
Right.
And nothing that, shows why they're badass, or other than maybe at the beginning with Blackout, we kind of see, why he's kind of a badass
right.
on that. But as far as personality, really nothing.
One shall stand. Two shall review.
Frenzy. I'm not a fan. And I have to wonder, I know that he was inserted to advance the plot. For those of you that don't even know who Frenzy is, because his name, I don't think his name was ever used, even inside of the captions that were used. Frenzy is the silver one that transforms into a thing and gets into Michaela's purse and, you know, kills the Secret Service agents on inside of Air Force
One. Is he the
one
that's like the Transformer on crack or something?
Yeah, he's the jukebox Gremlins Decepticon, basically, mm-hmm. yeah. Mm-hmm. And I didn't care for him. I thought he was too overtly goony. He was too overtly, look, I'm a gremlin. I mean, he even looked like a gremlin when he was yeah. in his Decepticon mode.
I like the technology associated with Frenzy, which kind of showcased how or why the Transformers aren't going to get boxed in as far as they can only transform into certain things.
Yeah.
I like seeing Frenzy transform into the boombox and
yeah.
whatever else the hell he turned into.
It's funny, he's kind of the receptacle of
yeah.
all of the other Transformers that didn't quite make it, which is another passing moment to link over to our website where you can go to the Lunchtime Gab. And on the Lunchtime Gab, we have this excellent story. It's a YouTube video that Brian found in regard to Soundwave, who you'll note isn't inside of this movie.
And I can't believe, and speaking of Soundwave, I can't believe you don't have him in there. And I yeah. understand, you know, what are you going to do with a cassette deck guy?
Right.
But obviously, with the technology, we find out why or how they can transform into anything. You can make Soundwave into anything.
Right. Well, see, I think
and he was Megatron's right-hand man.
Right. I think Frenzy could have been a cartridge that flies out of the new Soundwave's DVD tray.
Yeah.
You know, something like that.
Right.
So anything like that they could have done, and they chose not to. And
well, just to showcase Soundwave's mm-hmm. voice. I mean, that's obviously, that was yeah. the best part of Soundwave was his voice.
Right.
I got chipped. One shall stand. Two shall review.
The Tale of the Transformers, a Michael Bay film tape. Brian, final thoughts on Transformers, a Michael Bay film, 2007.
I will say, now that I've seen the film,
uh-huh.
been through the theater.
Yep. And the filter of what is always the Two Guys Talking podcast in regard to whatever we're reviewing. Because I have to tell you, I have a completely different feel of this film now that I've talked about it with you.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Because yeah. I
and
knew...
And it's not a 180 type thing, but I do have a legitimately different view of what I saw.
And we've talked about that before, is yeah. that, you know, there's going to be times where you come out of a movie or come out of watching a TV show or something, and then when you get down to sitting and talking with a friend, family member about the show, and they're enlightening you about certain things, you kind of change a little bit, and there's yeah. nothing wrong with it. That's no. all a part of gaining some more information
Absolutely.
And everything, and it's the fun of talking about movies
right.
and television
shows. It's also the magic
shows.
Of what is the Two Guys Talking podcast, yeah. if you ask yeah. me. I think it's what anybody that listens to our show can take away from.
I was highly impressed and surprised based upon my expectations coming into it. Again, you know, talking about the hype and looking forward to something like Transformers, yeah, I was really excited, but the realistic part, the right side of my brain was thinking, you know, this isn't going to be very good. It's Michael Bay. Regardless of how you think about Michael Bay, there's not very many movies that he's done that I actually enjoyed.
Right.
And I think for the most part, they did a pretty good job. Is it a great movie overall if you're not a Transformer fan? I mean, you know, for the action, for the technology that they showcase in the movie, I think you should go out and see it.
Mm-hmm.
For a Transformer fan, I think that's something definitely you need to go see. I would rate it probably 3 stars out of 4.
Okay.
Something I would recommend to friends to go see.
Sure.
Maybe it's a 3-star with an asterisk, because I enjoyed it, but I think that's more because I'm a Transformer fan.
Okay.
Take that as you want.
Sure. I think that's a very fair representation of this film. I'm also going to give it 3 out of 4 stars. There are very few ways that this could have improved upon itself, even with the little nitpicky things that we hit as far as what I could really consider as negatives.
Well, but
there was
I
nothing
would, you
glaring
know
inside of this movie that was a negative.
I wouldn't
me.
Say it's really nitpicky, the stuff that we brought up. I mean, the toilet humor, just the goofiness. If they would have cut that out, I think you actually would have had a pretty solid film.
Right. Well, that being said, though, I will say that this will be the most solid film of the summer blockbusters that we've seen. I can almost guarantee that. Even with Harry Potter coming out, in fact, it came out yesterday for mm-hmm. us here. And I'm certain that the weekend is going to be Gigantor, but it's because that the audience of Harry Potter is just so ridiculously gargantuan.
Well, not to interrupt you there, but now that you mentioned the other summer hits,
mm-hmm.
I will say this is by far the best of all the blockbusters so far. Spider-Man, Pirates, I haven't seen Shrek, so I can't say anything about Shrek.
I also haven't seen Live dye-free hard 4.0, whatever it's being
called.
Yeah,
but I really want to put that in the same category as the rest of these.
You have to, though, because it's right in the middle of them, in the middle of the summer blockbuster season, and it opened the same weekend as Transformers. You have to put it in the same
I think you can just because it opened up in that same area or the same time.
Right.
But as far as putting it up there with the juggernauts of Pirates, Shrek,
it's in line to be shredded by what I think is the best film so far this summer, Transformers.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, I give it a 3 or 4 stars.
Good. But like you said, we've got Harry Potter coming out, Mike. And
right.
I've got Transformers ahead of all the other juggernaut movies that we've seen so far.
Mm-hmm.
When I finally go out and see Harry Potter, that's going to be the bottom line as to which is the bigger movie for this summer.
Sure.
And just to let our listeners know, we are going to have a Harry Potter movie review, and we're also going to do something a little bit special. We're going to have our first Two Guys Talking Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows book review.
Outstanding.
Which
Outstanding.
We want to definitely get in on the Harry Potter thing here, because I know I'm a big Harry Potter fan. I've read all the books so far, really big into the movies.
And you know what? We've had about 30 of our listeners contact us to ask us if we're going to review the movie, and I can totally imagine them going, oh, they're going to do the movie. All right, thumbs up. Whoa, they're going to do the book.
Right,
they're
right.
going to do the book. They're going to love it, and that's why we're doing it.
Well, and it just seems like such a slam dunk to do the book, because it's the end of a series of a really iconic type thing that we've never seen
before in history. It is absolutely an icon.
And
it's
one of those things, and just to give you a little idea of what we're going to do, let's talk about the movie first.
Yeah.
We'll have just like you guys have listened to on the Pirates, Spider-Man, Superman, Transformers. We're going to do a regular review on that.
Yep.
And that's going to be Mike and I doing that in the next few weeks.
Uh-huh.
And a special thing we're going to do is on the final book of the series for Harry Potter, and that's going to be with my wife and myself doing it.
Yeah, it's going to be outstanding.
And how we're going to do that, it's going to be, right now it's going to be like a 7 or 8 part series podcast.
Right.
And what we're going to do is we're going to have a 10-15 minute podcast at the end of each night for however long it takes my wife and I to read the book, and we're actually going to buy 2 books and read side by side, because we can't stand sharing a book, finding out, you know, what happens before the other person does. But what we're going to do is read maybe 5 or 6 chapters a night, and then the next day we're going to have a 10-15 minute podcast talking about those chapters, and then we'll get that up on the site within a day or two.
Right.
So I think that's something that's going to be kind of exciting. It's something new and different for the network.
Right, and it's also a perfect segue into what is our second annual I Hear Your Podcast contest. Our second annual I Hear Your Podcast contest opens up this week. In fact, tomorrow it's going to be opening up, and it's your chance to provide your own podcast. Whatever you're passionate about, we want to hear about it. Make sure you log on to twoguystalking.com, and the contest this year is being sponsored by two software conglomerates, Acoustica, maker of Mixcraft software, which we make our podcasts with, as well as Overcast Media, who makes the Overcast software. They're both outstanding products, and they're sponsoring this year's 2007 Two Guys Talking I Hear Your Podcast contest. And so, with a triumphant transformation in this review of the Michael Bay film Transformers, I'm Mike Wilkerson, one of your hosts.
And I am Brian Sumatros, the other host.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Love for this planet will be your undoing, Prime!
This has to end here, Megatron.
Pick
guys. Mike Wilkerson here, one of two guys talking. How about getting the hell off our show?
Victory is mine! Death is yours!
What's up, Green Hill?
I'll blast you out of the sky, Megatron.
Go get him, Prime!
Thanks for listening to this edition of the Two Guys Talking Show. We hope you'll tell your friends and coworkers about us, and don't forget to put us on your podcast list. As always, you can visit and contact us online at twoguystalking.com. That's the number 2, guystalking.com. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.